My name is Walt Wongren. This has turned out to be the 1-2-3rd in a series of presentations that I've been calling Beautiful Sacrifice. We have not yet discussed the sacrifice, but we have represented it twice. I read a story on Monday, which is called Elizabeth and the Water Troll, and that was a sort of a grim fairy tale background. Those of you who are with me will know that it had the feeling of the Grimm's fairy tales, kind of Northern Europe. This was not planned, but it was done and it works. I read a story last night, which was a personal experience from my childhood, had something to do with the relationship between my father and myself. And once again, followed, if you had been able to listen carefully, it followed that whole concept of love as sacrifice. Only in this case, it was specifically my father, and it was a sacrifice that I did not recognize until the very end. Tonight, we have a story which really does follow in the sequence. It will be very much, to those of you who are here to hear Elizabeth, it's very much like the Elizabeth story, except that it's a totally different setting. This story is set in the inner city, and the people are not Germanic. As you will hear fairly quickly, they are black. And it's very sensitive to the culture in that my ministry has been in the inner city, or was in the inner city, from 1974 to 1985. And so this has been our experience, and the author draws upon the experiences that he has. Let me review for you the six characteristics that I identified on Monday that are a part, I think, of the beautiful sacrifice. Beautiful. The world does not necessarily call sacrifice beautiful, but these six things I look for. One, I said that it should be dramatic. It should be an event. Something happens. It isn't just a concept. It isn't just a heart's feeling that you hurt on the inside for somebody else. It's an event in which people encounter people and things happen. Two, it is an event which costs something. I wrote pain on the board before. I think I like the phrase costly better. It costs something of mine which is precious. I really am giving something up for the sake of somebody else, which leads me to number three. I know this is kind of simple. I know you know it, but it helps us to touch these things. Three is that it is of benefit to someone else. It serves them. They are the better for it, whatever the act was, which cost you something. Four. That was my number three. It is other word. The whole focus of the act is not upon oneself. Let me repeat that. The whole focus of the act is not upon oneself, not even indirectly. You do not get a reward out of the beautiful sacrifice. I'm sorry. You don't even get the reward of people recognizing what you did. They do not give awards for beautiful sacrifices. It isn't known, and that isn't the purpose. In fact, when the reward does come, if it comes, it comes as an astonishment. It was not expected. We'll talk about all these a little bit more clearly tomorrow. Five, it is willing. Nobody enforces it. You don't do it because you have to. Oh, thou Lutheran. You don't do it for the child because you have to, because it's in the law, or because somebody pushed you to do it. And it isn't that somewhere in your dealings with other people you were hurting, and someone else had forced you to do it, and then you say, oh, it's okay, this is my cross to bear. That's not a beautiful sacrifice if you feel you must. Grim Christian. And number six, I called it cryptic. Cryptic means that it does not have to be perceived even by the one who benefits. And that may be the hardest part of all. And all of these I take from Jesus Christ, from Christ's sacrifice, that the people who benefited from the acts of Christ knew not what they did and knew not what Jesus did either. That's love. That's what I call love. Sometimes when I read this story, I have to talk fast. I have to tell you that right away, because there is a character in this story who talks very fast, and I have to talk like him. Its title is Saxifrage, or Frage, or Frudge, the Break Rock, and that's exactly what it means in Latin, the breaking of the rock, and it refers, well, you will hear what it refers to as the story goes. Ready? This is a good story. I like it. I really do like it. But it starts sad. Once upon a time, there was a child who did nothing but sit by her window and sigh. She believed that as long as she lived, she could never open her mouth again, so she didn't. Sometimes her daddy would slip into the room and tell her some interesting bit of business and then smile, but she wouldn't smile back to him. Maybe he would ask her a question about her day, but she wouldn't answer. She never opened her mouth. Someone might think that this was a haughty girl to be treating her father in such a cool manner, but the truth is that she loved her daddy, and it was exactly for love that she refused to open up her mouth. She was afraid that she might hurt him. Of all the children in the world, she was the most beautiful. Her eyes were the haze at sunset. Her face was a loaf of bread come soft from the oven, smoky, golden, and so plump it broke her daddy's heart to look at her. Because of all of the children in the world, she was the saddest one, too. So he slipped from the room again in silence, sadly. And the little girl would do what she always did, would stare through her window at the ragged streets of the city and sigh. There was a secret inside of the child so dreadful that no one should ever discover it, a devil so dangerous no one should ever see. That's why she kept her mouth closed. Now it happened that a young man began to parade down the sad girl's street, right by her window. "Melones," he cried. He pronounced it Melones, and he was selling them. "Hey, great round Melones for great round bellies, Melones sweet for sweeter hearts." Little girl stared at him, but she gave no expression, and perhaps he took that for a challenge, for he came back daily, every day, and every day he came back livelier than the day before. "Whoop, I got me a load of sweet fat corn, green jackets and yellow skin, stripping bare and bite right in." He was always pushing a grocery cart full of goods, extolling his goods in shameless phrases, extolling himself, you know. Scam man, folks might say, a jive salesman selling anything under the sun, a skinny whip of a hawker, tireless and happy, outrageously happy in these dreary streets. "Greens all bitter for a black man's tongue," he shouted, clapping his hands at his own fine rap. "Whoop, greens to remember the hickory switches and his own black mama, yeah." Scam man sent a distinct wink to the girl in the window, then roared on down the street, "Buy greens in honor of your mamas, yeah." So one day it was melons, another corn, another greens, and then he came with fish he said he caught himself, and candles crying, "I am the light." And sometimes he gave it out that he was sharpening knives. And the scam man danced in the middle of the street, and he shouted and sang and popped his lips and winked at the girl in the window. And inevitably, he drove his cart by a round route to the window itself, so that one day he snatched his hat from his head and made a low bow right before the solemn child who watched him. He swooped his arm around himself like an actor of fame, peeped up at her, winked once more, then shuffled backward butt first, shaken with merriment, all full of himself, thoroughly impressed by his own theatrical ways. Little girl just stared. Who wouldn't? But she did not smile. She did not open her mouth. Yet something, when she saw that low bow, twitched deep inside of her. Maybe it was gladness, maybe just interest. It made her a tiny bit sorrier. And so it went as the weeks went by. The scam man sang a signifying tune, strutting while he sang it, declaring his handsomeness, though he was bone thin, his streetwise sass, though she never noticed he made a sale, his inborn talents, though his tune was more raucous than melodious, more shout than song. He cut a ridiculous figure, tall and grand and skinny as a flagpole. And all this would have been fine with her. The daily diversion would have been pleasant to her, except that finally he did something terrible and wonderful at once, and the poor girl began to worry. Worse, she began to fear. The scam man spoke directly to her. "Hey, girl," he cried suddenly, as though just noticing. "Hey, you pretty peck of something in your window," he shouted, sashaying toward her building, then stutter-stepping back again. He shouted and danced at once. "Why, you never smile at me?" Oh, her tummy tightened then. He was talking to her, and he was talking about her. "Where do you get the strength to fight my charms? Whoo, I'm a flat-down, jump-up strap of a beautiful boy. I am the best of a breed," he cried. "Then how are you able to resist my irresistible style?" He fired the questions at her, but he never waited for an answer, always twirling off as though stunned by the questions themselves, the marvelous mind in his own head. Poor girl gazed at him. It was a low window. She was only slightly higher than his bony frame when he came close. But someone might have called her haughty anyway, as though she were watching from a high, embattled tower, because she never opened her mouth or smiled or broke her scowl or did any such thing. So okay, the scam man declared, most unperturbed. "So all right, one day I whittle you down, Woody girl. But for today, I got my things to sell, my money to make, and corporate business deals to transact. Bye, you pretty pack of something. Bye," he cried, "and I'll be back." And he and his cart and the show and the noise all clattered on down the street and away. Poor girl sat in the window and suffered. Things had changed, because for the first time since she shut her mouth forever, this outrageous fool made her want to laugh. "Flat down, jump up, strap of a beautiful boy," he had said, and her stomach had squeezed with laughter. You can't control your stomach, but you can fight it, and she did. By a mighty act of will, the sad child had commanded the laugh to stay in her stomach, where it became a dead lump of simple pain. And the lump, it felt like sorrow. So now she wanted to cry, but she didn't do that either. She could not and she would not open her mouth for anything, not for laughter, not for tears. If she so much as smiled, her secret would show, and then even the happy salesman would be horrified by the evilness inside of her, and he would run away with loathing, and that would be just one more person whom she liked, but whom she killed. So she kept her mouth shut soberly, nothing in her face, no, nothing at all, not anything except sadness. For this was the poor girl's secret, that she had no tongue in her mouth at all, as other people do. Instead, there was a snake. A snake in your mouth can be shocking, frightfully ugly thing. But it was worse than that. Snakes can also kill by a bite of poison. And whom they do kill, and whom do they kill especially? The people you love. So the only way to handle a snake is keep it shut behind your teeth. Never, never open your mouth, or the snake will fly out and strike. Twice the little girl had opened her mouth to people she loved. Twice this serpent tongue had struck. Twice it had turned them into cold, cold stone. It should never happen again. The child had learned her lesson. Never talk again. Now you know why she sits so sadly in her window. And now you know why she cannot laugh for the scam man. She's not haughty. She's dangerous. For the first one that she turned to stone was her mother. But then she wasn't sure that she had done it. She only had suspicions. But the second one that she turned to stone was her brother, and that was the proof, because she saw the snake fly out. This is how it happened. After their mother had died, when the little girl still could not prove that it was her fault, she loved her brother more than ever. Their daddy was distant then. He worked the second shift. And when he come home, he walked the whole house groaning. So the little girl told her brother, she said, "Junie, I will love you." And she thought of a way to say it, so of how they needed each other more than anything. She said, "Junie, I will love you just like Mama." And she did. She kept her word. She loved her brother desperately. But after their mother died, the boy, who was 10 years older than she, began to change too. And they began to argue. And the more she loved him, the more they argued. So the loving grew harder and harder inside of her. In the evening, she said, "Why you quit going to school, June?" He was brushing and brushing his hair in front of a mirror. He stopped and said, "How you know that?" She said, "Don't matter how, June. What matter is, where you get lizard skin shoes? Where you get your pleated pants?" Nasty and uppity at once, he said, "Ain't none of your business." "You my business, June," she said. "You my brother. What you doing in daytime now? What you doing in the night that shames you?" "Shut up," he said, and he went back to brushing his hair. But she said, "Where you get your money now, June?" And then he turned on her. Her brother was always a wizard with words. He could make the language work for him, could talk himself into anything or out of anything. So now he aimed that language straight at her with no remorse because he was changing. "Licorice stick," he called her, and she dropped her eyes and she felt the love go tight inside of her. "Domino," he called her, "peppercorn, dirt, coal, charcoal, brick, not a spark of sense in your coal black head." So she felt that the love was writhing inside of her. "Girl, you tar in a world that likes milk better. Sticky mess I step in," he snapped. "You slow me down, you hear?" Then he told her that he was wiping her from his shoe. And he strutted out the door and he slammed it. So the love got harder and harder inside of her. It felt like a thick thing in her throat, which she could not swallow. It felt like a rope that coiled in her breast, tight and terrible and evil, though she didn't understand how love could be evil. It made her tremble. And then one night her brother came home, leering with liquor. She could smell it. He stood in her doorway in the bedroom and roused her up by shouting, and the dark was all around them. He was shouting about the worldly things he had done that night, things that she would never do, and therefore they were different, he said, so different. And he was laughing nasty, and the more he laughed, the thicker the love grew in her throat. Huge, it was blocking her breathing. Huge, it swelled like a vomit, and she thought that she was suffocating. Suddenly, the love burst out on its own. She opened her mouth and she screamed at her brother. She screamed about the grief of their dead mama, and the bite in her scream was that she called her brother a vile, wicked, evil name, the worst she'd ever heard of. No, no, sir, no. But she didn't scream at all. Another thing happened. A monstrous, terrifying thing. The love that shot from her mouth, it was a snake. A long, thick snake, a savage, hissing snake. It lunged from her stomach straight to her brother's face and it bit him like hatred, though it was love. And she saw it. She gasped and she sucked it back inside of herself. Too late. Her brother was stunned. Her brother was frozen to absolute silence. Her brother stood in the doorway like stone. Stone. Then neither she nor her brother talked. Well, she was scared to talk. He could not talk. The poison was in him, you see. Cold and stony went his face, paralyzed by the poison, you see. Day to day, he was a walking effigy, just empty. It used to be that the boy could talk himself out of anything, but two nights later, the police came and picked him off the street like picking a berry from a bush, and he said nothing to save himself, no, nothing at all. So they put him in prison then, as good as dead. And the poor girl knew that she had done it. Nobody but her. And now she had the proof, because she had seen it, and she knew one other terrible thing as well. She was the one that turned their mama to stone. For their mama had been sick for many months, and the little girl, she admitted it now, had grown tired of bringing her mama water. Little girl, she remembered this clearly now, had been mad at her mama that she wasn't getting up. In fact, the little girl had let herself think that her mama should quit. She'll be done with diseases and sicknesses and everything. Just quit and be done. Well, with all of these feelings inside of her, the little girl had whispered in her mama's ear one night, said, "I love you, mama. I wish you would sleep the deepest sleep ever." Oh, poor, sad, miserable girl. She got her wish. On the next morning, she had found her mother cold in bed, all stony on the pillow, a dusty statue of herself. And now that she had actually seen the snake that stunned her brother, she knew what had happened. "I love you, Mama," was a little serpent that had snuck into her mama's ear, had punctured a poison into her mama, and her mama was done with diseases now, all done. No one but the girl had done this thing. So now you know the reasons from the beginning to the end. Now you know why the beautiful girl wore such a hard expression. She was gritting her teeth against the serpent that slid up her throat. She was saving the world, and especially those she might love, from the snake. No laughing, no crying, no talking at all, because love in her was a danger to innocent people. The saddest, solemnest, soberest child in all the world. For love, she determined never to open her mouth again. Do you know such people? Do you understand them now? Yes, and all that is very well and good, and she might have succeeded in her severity. But what about that skinny, signifying salesman who paraded past her window daily, daily, every day? Now, there was a complication in all her fierce determination. For you could frown like the doom of God, but it didn't matter. This ridiculous fool kept coming anyway. Well, he varied the wares in his cart. He seemed to have infinite supplies. He bellowed his business all down the street, but eventually he wheeled his perfect self to that dark child mute in her window. And look what the scam man came selling today. Flowers, potted plants. And listen to his jive talk, boasts too outrageous to believe. "This here," he declared, rummaging in his cart, "wah, wah, wah. This here is magic for my stone sad girl." He lifted a plant of purple pink petals to the window ledge. He folded his hands and winked. "This here's the plant to pop you free, pretty girl," he announced. "Oh yeah, saxifrage." The name itself sent the fellow into a minor ecstasy. He grinned and clapped his hands and giggled with pleasure at himself. "Saxifrage!" he roared down the street. "Phew!" he mopped his brow. That little fit over, the scam man applied his attention to the girl in the window. "Saxa what?" my baby asks with the blinking of her eyes, on account of she got a stone mouth and can't do nothing but blink her eyes. Poor girl tried hard to stop blinking her eyes. "Sax," my baby wonders. "Of what?" repeated the scam man. "Well, I tells her, don't I? Saxifrage," says I, all full of my smartness. "Pretty girl, this here's a plant of magical powers. It cracks the stones, they say, by touch alone. Able, they say, to cut what iron cannot bite. And they say truly, and maybe," the scam man whispered in a low voice, "when I slip on down the street, you catch a notion to whiff the flowers. Maybe you put your lips to the petals, and then what?" "Whoop!" he suddenly shouted. "Then my magical plant crack open your stony mouth." Because that's what it does. It breaks rocks. Whoop. He flew in that same instant. He flew into a spiral dance over the wonderfulness of his plant. In that same instant, the child snuck a peek at the delicate pastel flowers, but the scam man saw her interest, and immediately he came very near to her. In a serious voice, he murmured, "I know your trouble, girl, and you should know it don't scare me none. No, not a bit." Mm-mm. But straightway, even before she could lift her eyes, that skinny fool was back to dancing. His serious word had come and gone so swiftly that she wasn't sure he had spoken at all. "And ho!" he roared from the middle of the street. "Do a plain street hawker come up with such a thing as saxifrage? Well, let me tell you the story, girl." The scam man made his dance an illustration of the story. He acted out the characters. And when he told of woodpeckers flying, why, he seemed himself to fly. Here's what he do, and here's what he already done. He tracked my brother woodpecker, whoop, to the woodpecker hole in a tree. When that woodpecker flit away for food, the man, he climbed and plugged that woodpecker hole. My brother woodpecker, he come home to find his hole hard as a rock. So the woodpecker fly away for saxifrage. Clack, clack, clack. What the woodpecker know by nature, the poor man can find out. Here come the woodpecker back, the pretty plant in his beak. With saxifrage, he crack that plug. With a magical plant, he break it. And when the woodpecker don't need it no more, with that same sweet plant, the smart man run away to give it to his baby. Oh me, oh my. Clap, clap, clap. Scam man shot his shoulders to his ears, rolled his head left and right, and moaned in the deliciousness of himself. Oh baby, that man is me, he fairly wept with his pleasure. And baby, you, he sang, now moving down the street with his cart and all his clangorous noise. You can't do no better and make a friend of me. I am so smart. I am so wonderful. A flat down, jump up strap of a beautiful boy. Oh. And then he was gone. There was only the plant on her window ledge below her chin. And the poor girl couldn't help herself. In the silence of the street, she started to cry. Tears rolled down her cheeks to drop on the purple-pink flowers, the sacks of something. But though she could not control the tears, she absolutely refused to open her mouth. She kept the ugliness inside herself, imprisoned behind her teeth. Therefore, it was a miserable whimpering that she did, and not a true cry. Oh, how she wanted to love the laughing, signifying, jive-talking fool of a black-strap salesman. But loving him would horrify him. In her was the wicked power to kill him cold, so she kept her mouth closed and wept with a very strange sound, like a cat mewing. Perhaps tears are the finest moisture for the saxifrage, because the delicate flower flourished. Every time the scam man came by now, the girl wept on the plant. And he brought her the silliest things for sale, things that had no meaning except for fictions and imagination. Here he came with a jewelry box, filigreed in silver, but nothing was in it she could see. He held its blood-red velvet open to her gaze, and he whispered, "Treasures, girl. Brighter than diamonds, better than pearls. Can't see what's meant to be heard. Its names must stone sad girl. Names, one for you and one for me." He closed the beautiful box and he left. And she watered the plant on the window ledge. Then here he came with hollow lipstick tubes, laughing and slapping his skinny knees at the joke. He swore to her that this lipstick could paint pretty smiles on sorrowful lips, but only after saxifrage had broken the stone of the baby's mouth. He said it came in three colors, one for happiness, one for joy, and one as red as jubilation. And when he left, she poured a rich, warm water on the thirsty plant. But then the scam man performed a trick for which there was no joke. And the thick love strove so strongly in the poor girl that she couldn't stand it anymore. Listen. One day he stood by her window with nothing at all to sell but his good right hand, which he raised on high between them. "Sad baby girl," he said, "it's free for the asking. Let saxifrage just crack the thinnest hairline smile in your hard, hard face, and this here splendid, sleek, magnificent prize of a perfect hand, it's yours. Oh, baby girl, it want to be yours. I asked it. It said, yeah." No smiling. Not the ghost of a smile, no words, no parting of her lips. But the tears streamed down her stony face like the rivers out of paradise. And the love rose up like a steeple in her throat. She wanted to gasp, but the scam man took the forefinger of his good right hand and reached and touched her cheek, and drew away one teardrop on the tip of his finger. And she gazed at this, and he brought the hanging teardrop to himself, and he kissed it. Then she saw that her sorrow ran even to the corners of his lips. Oh, love began to swell in her mouth, to press on the backs of her teeth. It was terrible. She was losing all control. Love was just about to split her determination and issue out the lunging, killing serpent. So with enormous grief, she pulled her head into the room and she slammed her window shut against the scam man and his plant. And she ran to the corner and crouched there and covered her mouth with both her hands, never to speak, never to cry, not even to sob, to be silent forever and ever and ever, because she loved the scam man now. And she didn't want to kill him. Oh, pretty baby, more beautiful than all the children in the world and sadder than any. Oh. So she sat in the corner, frightened and dazed. Sometime her daddy came in. But he sounded so woeful that she couldn't look at him. "What can I do to help my daughter?" he sighed. But she didn't answer him, and he trudged from the room with lowly shoulders. "Scam man," she thought, "do you see my window shut? Do you come? Do you look in this direction?" And her daddy came back. He said, "Once I had a wife, and my daughter had a mother. Once I had a son, and my daughter had a brother. Now I only have my daughter, and I'm losing her too." But no matter what he said, she didn't answer him. She sat in the corner up and her arms around her knees and her forehead down on her kneecaps. And so he left. "Scam man," she thought, "what is your name? If I called you by your true name, what would I call you?" And then one evening she heard a sound at the window pane, a sharp, light, insistent sound like pecking. Tap, tap, tap. And again, tap, tap, tap. She raised her head and she listened, tap, tap, tap. But she wasn't going anywhere. Sadness had made her wise to all the tricks of the world. But her daddy came in and squinted at the window. "What's that?" he said. "Well, ain't that strange," he said. "I never did see such a thing before, huh? It's a woodpecker come knocking at your window, huh?" But her father had little interest for anything these days, and he left. A woodpecker. Slowly, the sad small girl rose. A woodpecker, tap, tap, tap. Well, that wasn't dangerous. She walked to the window, tap, tap, tap. The evening light was gray. The room was in shadows, and the window was a rectangle of the dying light. Tap, tap, tap. She bent to peer at the woodpecker, but suddenly stood stiff and upright, shaking with two almighty emotions. It wasn't a woodpecker. It was the scam man, tapping with his forefinger on the glass, come smiling. And one of her feelings was the sweet rush of love, a geyser of gladness. Love shot from her chest to the top of her head with such a tingling that she thought she would explode, and she almost cried, "You've come." But the other feeling was terror, that she would cry anything at all. No! With his right hand, the scam man was pecking the glass. In his left hand, he was holding the purple-pink blossom of the saxifrage. And with his eyes alone, he said, "What I got for you, my baby girl, the best thing that there is, peace." Then he touched the window with the blossom, and the window panes vanished like smoke. The poor girl shook and shook, for nothing divided them now, but she could not move, she would not scream, "No, no." The scam man continued to smile, a beautiful, soft, untroubled smile, which had the mystery of killing in it. And at the same time, he continued to reach the saxifrage into her room until it brushed the poor girl's throat, and she broke indeed. She exploded. "Go away," she screamed. "Go away, get away from me." But everything happened exactly as she knew it would. Her words were not words at all. They were the venomous serpent. The serpent sprang from her mouth and plunged through the air. Scam man threw up his right hand. Serpent bit it in the palm. Then it flung its body in single muscle around the scam man's neck, and it squeezed. It squeezed. "Ah," cried the child. There was suddenly an enormous void in her where the serpent had been lodging. "Ah," she wailed, for the serpent was strong and wrathful and wicked, and that was herself. That was the length of her evil. "Ah," she shrieked, no words at all, because she had no tongue. Scam man sank to his knees, strangled and coiled at the throat by the serpent. No one could tear that hideous strength away, but the scam man wasn't even trying. He was bending the serpent's head toward his mouth. With his right hand pierced by its fangs, he was setting the skull between his teeth. He was biting till the skull bones cracked, and he crushed them so the snake began to shudder and it twisted belly out, and it fell. But the poison was in the scam man now, And everything happened exactly as the poor girl knew it would. Scam Man looked at her once more in the dim light and then sighed and sat down on the sidewalk with his back to the wall below her window, and he bowed his head and quietly turned to stone and died. Scam Man. He might have been a black iron in the shape of a sitting man. The moon arose to shine on the back of his neck. He might have been a statue erected and then forgotten, but he wasn't. He was the one who loved her. And she said, "I did this thing. Scam Man. Can you hear me?" "Ah," the poor girl wailed, all inarticulate in the night. Her mother, her brother, and now her friend, she made fists and lifted them to the sky. "Hateful, hateful child." Tears streamed down the two sides of her face and splashed on the leaves of the plant that once her love had given her. And he had plucked the blossom, but he had left the green leaves here for her. "Ah," she cried, her bitter tears burning the leaves. They drooped. They began to curl. On the following morning, nothing arose. The sun did not arise. Instead, a dirty light, a guilty gray light, crept over the whole city, sucking the color from everything. The city streets stayed mostly empty. Maybe it was Saturday. Maybe no one had work to do. The sky was stony gray. There was a girl child sitting in the window, framed by the window to look like the picture of desolation. She was a beautiful child, for her cheeks were rounded brown like muffins, and her face was the bread that is baked in an oven. But she was painfully beautiful because her eyes were crashed with sadness. Her eyes were heavy and weary, as though she had not slept the whole night through. Her mouth was open. This was a curiosity because it stayed that way. A coal black gap in the center of her face. A cave was her mouth, open as though forever startled. Open as though the child were always just about to say a word. Open and perfectly empty. There were no words in there. Sometimes she said, "Ah," and the tears rolled from her sad eyes down the muffin cheeks. But "ah" is not a word. It is a lamentation. And "ah" is all she said. Like the sun, this little girl did not arise that day. Neither did the small herb plant on the window ledge just below her chin. Not rising at all, the little leaves hung down in a mortal droop. They had yellowed. They had loosened their finger hold on the stems of the plant. And every time the sad girl sighed, they trembled. And every time a small leaf caught a tear, it sank still farther down, as if the load were more than it could bear. Under the girl child, under the potted plant, under her window altogether, and still and silent on the ground, lay a certain density, a stone, like all things else that dreary day, not arising. Sometime during the day, a man came into the room behind the girl. He said, "Is my ears lying?" He said, "Did I make it up, or is somebody making a sound in here?" Sad girl drew a deep breath and said, "Ah." "Honey," the man said, almost panting for gladness, "honey, is that you? Is you talking now?" "Ah," she said. "Well, glory," the man said, "progress. You prized your mouth open. Oh, daughter, I could cry. Talk to me, talk to me. Say something dear to me." But the child was crying, and the only noise she made was lamentation. And the big man back behind her almost kneeled down in pity. "Ah," she said, and he said, "What's the matter, honey? Please, I'll help you. I'll help you the next step on your way. What can I do for you?" And she was staring out the window, so he ran to the window too to see what she was looking at. "Is that it?" he fairly shouted. "Is that what troubles my daughter? Oh, honey, that ain't nothing. I could clean the whole street up for you if that had perked my miserable daughter up. But a heap of rock ain't nothing. Girl, I'll get me a barrel or a truck or something. By tomorrow, you wait and see. By tomorrow, I'll clear that heap of rock from underneath your window." The girl said. I know, said the man. "It's hard times, honey, but it's almost over now, and I ain't gonna let you suffer no more." The girl cried. We got each other, he said. Daddy and daughter, we understand each other, he said, crushed by the weight of it all. He sighed, and then he said, let me go see if I can raise a truck. By tomorrow, honey, I promise. And he left. Oh, wailed the poor child, and all the dry leaves on the small plant shivered. But then for the rest of the day, it seemed as if the girl child set a watch. Her face grew very stiff with determination. She folded her arms across her chest. She was a sentinel. She was a guard, like soldiers at a tomb. She never moved from the window, watching. So the gray light drained away. So the evening darkness sank on the city again. So a fitful breeze began to blow. And then two natural things occurred, unremarkable in the order of the universe. The little leaves of the plant on the window ledge, the dead leaves, they fell down. The breeze had snapped them free, and now it hurried them down to the stone below. Like a soft crown, they landed on the head of that stone. Lightly, they settled on its hands and on its feet, and they nestled there. And then the other thing that happened was, a child laid down her head and fell asleep. She was too tired to watch forever. The sun came up in the morning, and then there was a jangling, raucous sound far down the street. Little girl popped her eyes open, and the first thing she looked for was the scam man. But he was gone. The walk below her window was empty. She leaped up. She was going to run and find her father and beat on his chest for anger for taking the scam man away in a truck. She was going to scream and make desperate signs to ask where they had taken the scam man. But she only got as far as the doorway, because then she heard that jangling, raucous, unmusical, abrasive sound from down the street, and she stopped. She heard, "Y'all think it's fish I'm selling today, but it ain't, Tiffy." She heard, "You suckers cock your eye at my wares, and you say, that ain't fish, and you say, what is that, eels? And you say, it's liver, and I say, no, whoop, no, it's something that all y'all need, because few y'all got it." She heard, "Words! It's words! I'm selling words today!" And then she heard, "Where's my baby at her window? Where's that pretty face? Where's that child that never done told me her name? Where is she?" So the girl flew to the window, scat man. Her poor heart kicked at the wall of her chest. "Scat man, is that you?" She stuck her head out into the street. "Whoop, whoop, there she be!" And there he was. The prancing, dancing, spinning, cavorting scam man, nudging his grocery cart on up the street, bowing to shuffle a few steps, then snapping his body upright and clapping for himself, his own best audience. Little girl popped to the sight. Her brown cheeks cracked. She grabbed the top of her head with both hands and laughed with her mouth wide open, a liquid, wordless sort of laughter, like insanity. "Scam man! Whoop! Oh, he was a beautiful piece of a dancer. Scam man, black as the kick of a horse. Scam man, skinny as a fishing pole, flicking left and right. Scam man, limber and loose and light on his feet, not a notion of stone about him." The jabber and jive talking, signifying scam man alive. Whoop, whoo, oh, but that man was ugly. Oh, how the little child did love him. Straight to her window he danced, and he thumped the ledge with his hand, boom, like the perfect business deal had just been done. She laughed, delirious. He spun away and showed her his back, pumping her elbows for sheer joy because of himself, bicycling his feet. "Oh, me, oh, my," he moaned to the other side of the street. "I be style, I be beauty, I be my own self, truly, oh." She laughed and laughed, clapping her hands and stretching her mouth with laughter. "Saxifrage," she thundered, "do crack the hardest deep down, damned as cold as dead as Cora any rock. 'Cause listen," he said, suddenly slipping back to the window, laying his hand on the little girl's cheek. "Listen, how my baby do laugh. Just listen to my baby now." It was his good right hand. In the nearness of the scam man, the little girl fell suddenly quiet. She took his hand in hers, and she gazed at it. There was a wound there, but the wound had healed. She kissed the palm of his hand, and low and slow, the skinny man moaned, "Whoop." And she gazed into his smiling eyes, and he said, "Well, baby, whoop for sure." Then he drew his hand away and he said, "Pretty girl, I got some stuff in here." He rummaged around in the grocery cart. He brought up hollow lipstick tube, screwed it open. Nothing there. Like an artist, he applied it to her lips and hummed at the wonder of what he was doing. "There," he murmured. "There now. Her mouth is smiling red as jubilation." And it was. She felt the fire of smiling ear to ear on her gladsome face. He was rummaging in the grocery cart again, mumbling, "'Tain't fish, no, nor liver neither, no. What I got, here's the finest food I ever did serve." Then he brought up a strap of something that might have been rich toffee for all she knew, but it was moist and it shimmered in the morning light. It was supple like silk. "Baby child," he said, "eat this." And she did. Cool and good, like a thickening cream it was. She swallowed it. Immediately she felt full. The great void inside of her was filled, even from her stomach to her mouth. Scam man narrowed his eye at her and whispered, "Baby, talk to me. Talk to me." She gave him a curious look. "Baby," he whispered, sharp-eyed, "talk to me. Say yes." Soft and wonderful, as easy as breezes in the window frame, with perfect clarity and straight out loud, the little girl said, "Yes." Her eyes flew open. Child was shocked by what she had done. The fire of smiling became a running conflagration. "Yes," she gasped. "Yes, yes," she shouted. "Scam man, I said yes." "And that ain't all," he grinned right back at her. "What you got, baby girl, is a tongue in righteous condition. Ain't no kinks in that tongue, no, but words, yes, words and truth and chatter, yes, speeches and song and soft black rap and prayers and beseeching and praise, amen, alleluia, yes. Ain't no end to the run of language in that tongue, no, oh baby, baby," the scam man had began to pant, was grinning, was overcome by the prodigy of himself. "Oh baby, what I done give you, well, I can't call it nothing but a miracle. The first one ever and the last one too. What I done give you, pretty baby, is to talk like me. Whoop. Whoop." So then he had to go off and dance a while in the middle of the street. And she was trying to think of a song to sing as a rhythm for his dancing, since she could sing now. But for the first time she noticed a crown of the tiniest leaves encircling his brow. Dark leaves, dark and living leaves. But it seemed that they grew from the scam man's flesh. "Scam man," she called. "Scam man, what's your..." She was going to say name, but he threw up his hand and shouted, one more thing before your thing," he cried, "and sweeter than honey wine, this thing is too." So he rummaged for the third time in his cart, and he brought up the jewelry box, all filigreed with silver. And grinning like Christmas morning, he opened it below her gaze and showed her the blood-red velvet upon which there was nothing. Oh, but it must have been the most precious nothing in the world, by the way he picked it up between his two fingers, the rarest nothing that ever was. He raised it to her face and laid it lightly between her lips. "Baby," he said, grinning like the melon split across its middle, "say it." "Say what?" she said. "What I give you," he said. "Baby, say your name." Girl child reached to the window and grabbed the scam man's hands. "My name," she whispered. He nodded. "I need you to say your name." Then gazing into his eyes, she said, "Mary." "Oh," whoop, he said softly, "Mary." She threw her arms around his skinny neck. She came fully out of the window, and he embraced her too with his own arms, long as ropes, and she wept against the side of his face. "My name is Mary. And now I can say," said the scam man into the beautiful girl child's ear, "what I've been wanting to say from the beginning of time. I love you, Mary. Mary, 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 Mary. I love you." Whoop. It's not an easy story, and I'm not necessarily a children's story, but what I will tell you, it's a story about an experience which is not very easy. And you don't move from such experiences easily, but through great difficulty and through sacrifice. Tomorrow, when we meet, we will talk about Elizabeth and the water troll. It is on tape if you haven't heard it and want to hear it before we talk about it. We might mention the Christmas story, but we will also talk about this story. If you have questions or ideas, save them. Thank you.